together. I remember telling my sister is here. If she wasn't here in Cape Town with me, then I would not even come to work. But since she's with me, I brought her into Parliament, and I suggested to her this isn't the best committee to come to today. With due respect to the speakers, the one is here and the one isn't yet. But the point is that she's a bit of an expert on the areas we're looking at, many things, the financial person. So I sent her to another committee. But having said all that, may I welcome everybody. Len Valvey will be here from the IDASA. I suggested to him that the first hour, from 9:30 to 10:30, is allocated to Martin Stevens, and therefore he needs to come, unless he wants to particularly, until 10:30. Okay, having said that, Mari wants to tell me?
Just a question from that administrative nature.
Yeah.
Attendance register. I didn't find any attendance register last week. I didn't know whether I missed it, but what is the procedure? Because at the end of the day,
We do report on that, as you know, in our annual report. I think the secretary sometimes signs on behalf of the people. She notices them, he notices. I know Chris used to do that sometimes. So we can circulate it, but I mean, you know, I'm very easy. I don't want to do it. I'm easy. I don't have any particular views, as long as people are accurately recorded. And in the last 3 years, might not have 4 years, nobody's complained about the recording. But it's fine. Maybe we just sign it. Okay, so agreed. Okay. Next thing I want to mention before we move on. Next week, Wednesday, we were instructed by the committee section to put down taking Parliament to the people. Now, we didn't know what that meant, but I took it that committees were going to kind each other and to sponsor and so on. Now, apparently that's not going to happen, and committees are now required or requested to have meetings. Now, I gather that the human has a check. Good. Okay. We're going to check, but as I understand it, next week, Wednesday, instead of us meeting to discuss the shareholder management model, which is what I proposed to the department, SAA is being called before the COPA. And I think since SAA involves us, we should go to that meeting rather. Also, we will acquire certain skills in watching how COPA handles SAA, because they are more technically efficient than we are. They understand budgets and so on better than we do. This is their forte, this is their area. So we'll acquire skills. So I want to suggest next Wednesday, can you send a note to us, check with us. If COPA is not having SAA next week, then we will then have the shareholder management model. Okay. Now, one other announcement very quickly. We are having the autumn school on the 7th to 11th of August. At this stage, the options are Arniston, Pumalanga, and if neither of that works out, offer that Peter has presented to the powers that be in the department. Now, the program, the draft program around, I can share it with you, but effectively, it flows from my annual report. What we are saying is precisely this, that the committee needs to improve its capacity to evaluate budgets and to understand finance. So we want the whole day allocated to that. Secondly, Infraco. What the hell is all this about? Apart from Chris Wang and possibly Bongi Kosi, with the permission of the chief whip, the whip on outside turned up to meet him. Presumably, Wolf has told him he doesn't have to come today. You know, they're the only two people on the planet, but the rest of us don't. So Infraco is a big issue for us. Then the terminal bit modular reactor and nuclear power, given the way the government is forging ahead, we said that should be a major issue. Apart from that, they are discussing with us in a very academic and high-powered theoretical way some of the issues they raised with us around the role of SOEs and so on. So is there anything specifically that members feel we should discuss? For Mani who doesn't know, the idea is the department meets with the portfolio committee for a whole week. We go off somewhere so members can't trip where cell phones don't work and so on, where, you know, members can't roll in and roll out. They are stuck there. It's a residence and a conference center. It was very successful last year. And what happens is departments are much more forthcoming in a context like that because they're not defending their turf. And there's no press and PMG reporting and so on. So we find that even in the presence of the opposition parties, they're much more forthcoming. So is there anything members feel we should add to the program? Because they want to know, since they're putting together one or two international experts. Last year they had about three or four international experts. Is there anything members want to add, what do you feel we should be discussing in the open school? All right, you can tell me by phoning me in the next few hours, okay? Or next few days. About we discuss that program with you. Normally the
open school.
Yeah. Normally the secretary comes if you're still with us. Hopefully we'll also have a time with you. Okay, anything else? No. Okay, hand over then to Martin. We welcome him. Martin, last week the committee decided we would write to you formally to thank you for your contribution to the committee. It's just now that it's you leaving without any reflection on your successor, obviously, as you understand. And today we wish that you will be a productive member of some other committee. Over to you. The deal we struck with Martin, you remember last year, is that he will assist the committee to empower itself. And today we said to him, look, just deal peripherally, cursorily with two issues. What? How does the soccer stage actually work? Well, my three said yesterday, I couldn't understand very much of business day's page one outcome. That, you know, the value of the stock fell in the JSE because something's happened in China, which has impacted on the US and so on. Now, if you could, I was going to bring that along, and you know, in my three said, I forgot. But you might have, see, what exactly is the stock exchange? Why does it exist? Why do people enter into the stock exchange? What are different forms in which they enter in? And then dealing with SOE. Like listing, I used to support listing. Let me give you one example of how naive I am. I supported IPOs because I thought, like Suvita Kondo, being the populist we are, that, you know, the masses will benefit. But then I speak to somebody like Rob Davies, who also belongs to the same Communist Party she and I do, the same political. He says, no, the problem with IPOs is once you have IPOs, it's true the masses benefit. But then the opportunity for a state-owned enterprise to do what it wants to do is lessened. Because it has pressure to keep the value of the shares high. And managing, therefore, keeping the value high of the shares and socio-economic developmental objectives is greater, the challenge, in a case of IPOs, as against like a foreign company, interestingly, Peter needs to look into this, buying shares. So IPOs sound nice, but if you want to retain the government mandate on the socio-economic developmental objectives, it's more challenging. So you see, we need to know about all the different forms. Then he will deal with, the second aspect is hedging, which he's an expert on, he's written many books on it. Okay, over there, then, Martin Stevens. I won't read Martin Stevens' TV.
This is
that's okay with you.
I'm looking forward to it. Chairperson, first of all, just to confirm that SIE is coming to Skopje next Wednesday. Secondly, I don't know if my eyes are getting weak or what, but I can't see him. Maybe you should come close to that. Come up
there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I do.
We know that. I don't know that.
Why it comes up
to
understand the stock exchange, why do you look at your pension benefits? Last week and this week.
Really? Getting done?
No. But I wouldn't say cash in.
Really? Yeah, see, Peter is another little expert here. So he keeps denying it. So he's an expert by opening his big mouth. When it's this guy is saying it,
it's a big one.
Anything that I can write on
the... Howard, can you get something for him to write on this?
Thank you. I was given 20 minutes on each topic.
Well, we're in a bit of latitude. 25 would be fine. But we're going to continue this.
Yeah.
So please, don't get out of this parliament. Eh?
No.
If you have a contact with us.
I do, yes.
And we told you, Mark, you are the VA ideologist, yes. Technical expert now. This is Professor Stevens, not...
That's not my other hand.
Can we make it clear, this is Professor Martin Stevens, not enemy Martin Stevens. The enemy is there at the moment. There's only one enemy. Where's the enemy?
Then
it looks like... Can I just say one little final thing? I know I'm talking too much, but I'm sick, so...
It helps you.
You know when we were in Codesa, right? I was at the periphery of Codesa. Mm-hmm. So, needless to say. So, of course, Bali Musa comes and he reports to us, and he says, you know, the enemy is not listening. And we can't trust the enemy. Enemy meaning the National Party at the time. So then he says, and you know, we told the enemy last time, is this continuous, we're going to go back to mankind. And you know, the enemy is behind us, but look at them. And the enemy said this, and so people in the AFC meeting will say, the AFC Alliance meeting will say, yeah, but you should speak to the enemy and tell them, you know what, if they tell us, the unions are behind us. After all this talk, as we're leaving for our flight, we happen to look into the bar there, Kirsu. There's Bali Musa and Cyril Ramaphosa, and I think Pick Bota and some other guy, slapping each other on the back and drinking their beers and laughing. You know how Pick Bota laughs, because after all this laughter, you know. So I'm going to think, what? I don't use the word. Enemy is there. Look at these guys. They sold out already. And how right we were. This was 1991. They sold out already. But there's nothing recorded, is this, while I'm asking? Because there's no mic here. Is it being recorded? Is it being recorded?
Well, on the TMT.
Yeah, but you're sensible enough to realize that is a facetious of the cup. Yeah, okay. So, definitely off the remark. Okay.
Okay. I want to try and put it in context, in a context so that we all understand why things work the way they work, not only how they work, but I hope I can do that. I've written up here.
Will everybody be able to see
I put in here mitigating financial risk because both.
Can you guys see this?
Just you
should be in front of the screen.
Is that okay? And I was never a teacher, so I don't know how to write on a board. And my wife, who is a teacher, always criticizes me when I speak and I have to write. She said, you know nothing about writing on a board. I said, yeah, that's true, but, you know, I try. Okay, so, both lectures today, in fact, concern mitigating financial risk, or controlling it, or managing it.
The heat is on rather than the...
So when I mention the word risk today, I'm talking about financial risk. In other words, the risk of losing money. Not the risk of having your business burned down. That is a risk that you have with the fire department and all of that. But if it burns down, you're going to lose money. And in that sense, it's a financial risk as well. Okay. So how did it come about that companies, the whole idea of companies originated? It originated in Britain in 200-something years ago. Because business means risk. You cannot have any business without also having risk, financial risk. If you start a business, it means you are risking your money. So therefore, it means you have a risk of losing it. If there was no risk, there would be no profit. Risk and profit are absolutely bound together. Some risks, all risks you want to handle, some risks you want to get rid of totally. If you are the owner of the business, then you personally stand to lose whatever the debt of the business may be at the end of the day, and they may be great, because you may be building toasters that are so badly built that it blows up some people's houses and they sue you for damages of millions and millions and millions, and they're going to come in and they are going to sell your house and your car and your children and everything that they can lay their hands on in order to make up the money. And people found that now they want to limit that risk. They want to enter into business, but they want to limit risk. And how do they limit it? You create a company, which is an artificial person, but it is in law a person just as much as you and I are persons, and it can do almost anything that you can do except it can't have sex, it can't marry. Some of us friends with
that.
Because of. And some it has a very limited capacity to commit crime. Very few crimes that a company can commit, which is committed by its employees or directors or whatever. Okay. What does it limit your risk to? You can start the business, and because it's in a company rather than in your own name, the risk is limited to the money that you actually put into the company. Everything that you put in can be lost, but no more, as a shareholder. That's the limit of your risk. And that is why people prefer to do business in companies. So keeping that in mind, and that is why we call a company limited. LTD, that's short for limited. And it means that the liability of shareholders are limited. It's a warning to people, to the public, who does business, to say, remember, you are doing business with a company, and don't think you can come and talk to the shareholders if you have losses, you will speak to the company. Our risk is limited to the amount of money that we put in. That's it. And if it has the word PTY, because I remember we had this discussion in the beginning, and I think that's important to understand. PTY is short for proprietary. Proprietary. That's what the PTY stands for. And that means ownership. Which means really, that is short for telling you that there are a limited number of proprietors, owners in this company. It's telling you we are just a private group of people that run this business. So that is why you have PTY, limited proprietorship. And liability are both limited. Which means that in the private company, the real issue is that the shares are not freely transferable. Shares are not freely transferable. If I want to get out of a PTY limited, if I have shares in a PTY limited and I want to get rid of those shares, I have to offer them, first of all, back to the guys who are shareholders at the moment. I can't go to the public and just offer that shit. Then if they don't want to take it, then I can offer it to somebody else. They may well turn around and say, no, that's not acceptable. We don't like this guy. And therefore you'll have to find somebody else. And even if you do find somebody else, and he comes with an offer, they will say to you, okay, Martin is prepared to give you 70,000 rand, which he hasn't got, for your share, but since that's the price we'll give you. And then they still have this option to buy. Okay? So it means that if you have shares in a private company, they are not easy to get rid of. And therefore, you should be very sure that that is a business that you want to get involved with. And that's what you want to stay involved with. If there are lots of other people, but many of these companies are just family companies. And by our minds, we're family members. Alright. But if the company is just limited, if it's company limited, it just means that the shareholders have limited liability. You can't take action against the shareholders if the company owes you money. Okay. Or if the company causes you damage, you can't go against the shareholders. Now, keeping that in mind, that we're talking about litigating financial risk and that we're talking about limited liability, you can see that we can now get people to participate in our business if it's not the PTY limited.
Sorry, Martin. Question is related, but why you're talking.
Okay.
People want the conceptual clarity. They can intervene.
Yeah, sure. Sure. You want to ask?
Can't be a company without
supporters.
So why
definitely coming to that.
Okay. I just wanted to explain the limitation of risk.
Okay.
A company is a legal person separate from the people who own it. It's a thing. Not a thing that you can touch and see, because it's all paper. But it is a legal person, as I said, that can act. And it is totally separate from its shareholders. The shareholders own the company. How does shareholding come about? If you want to start a business, you will need money. Depending on the type of business, you may need a lot of money or you may need a little bit of money, but you are going to need money. You are going to need money for the capital expenses, even if you just turn into the computers and chairs that you're going to buy. You're going to do that, and you're going to need working capital, because any new business that starts, you're going to run a few months before you actually make a profit, or not even a profit, before you actually cover costs. So you need working capital so that you can survive for the first, say, 6 months. In other words, you would have to live off capital to pay the rent and pay the electricity and wages and so on. And that is all capital. Now, capital comes from somewhere. From where? It comes from the people who want to decide, we're going to start this business. Okay. But they say, look, we know we're going to have to put in this money, this capital, but we want limited liability. We prefer to put that at risk, the turmoil. That's why we go for a company. Right. The capital that's in the company is represented by shares. In America, they call it stocks instead of shares. It's exactly the same thing. And that's why the stock exchange is not a share exchange. But in fact, the JSE today is not a stock exchange. It is a securities exchange. That's because it deals in lots of paper assets, which are not necessarily shares, but shares, bonds, futures. Don't worry about the difference in that. That's why they have a greater collective name, securities, paper assets. It deals in paper assets. So, if you and I go into a business and we've worked out that the capital required for this business is 100,000, and I say, okay, but I've only got 40,000. And you say, but, okay, I'll put in the 60,000. Then how many shares should we each have? You should have 60% of the shares, and I should have 40% of the shares. Yeah. In other words, you get the number of shares relative to the capital. So the first thing about a share is that it has a nominal value. A nominal value, usually 1 rand. Each share is worth 1 rand. And it therefore, it represents 1 rand of the capital in the company, the capital that the company has to use. So, in my case, I would have, strictly speaking, 40,000 shares in this company, and she would have 60,000 shares.
That's worth 40,000 rand.
Because it's 1 rand per share. Oh, we could have 10 rand shares. So that's 4,000 shares. Depends on that. Problem with the share capital is, of course, that there's taxes to be paid and duties to be paid. I don't want to go into the detail. People do it differently. I want to get the theory straight before that. Still works in principle the same. It works out exactly the same. So, it represents the capital that the company has at its disposal, and the shareholders own a share of that. Now, the whole point of having such a business is to make a profit, surely. Because we've now put our money down, we've gone into a risk situation. Why? Because we want a return on our capital. We want to make a profit out of this. So when the company, that's another difference for the company, is owned by people, whereas the person is not owned by anybody, it's owned by the shareholders. When that company makes a net profit at the end of the first year, we hope, who does that profit belong to? which obviously belongs to the shareholders, to pay the people to put in the capital. So if we make 10,000 rand profit at the end of that year, how much am I going to get? I'm going to get 4,000 rand. I'm going to get 6,000. That's the simple basic principle of how this works. But before we can say, and that's called a dividend, the company declares a dividend. Now, the dividend that is declared, it may not declare all of the profit as dividend, because we might decide as shareholders, look, we need to put more money into this company because next year we want to grow, we want to become bigger. So what we're going to do is we're going to take half the money and put it back into the business, and the other half will take as dividends. So in that case, I'm going to get 2 and she's going to get 3, and the other 5,000 we're going to plow back into the company. Okay. So that is dividend policy. Now, government comes and says that we're going to have a 30% tax, or 29% as it is now, tax on the company. And so before we can declare our dividend, we've got to pay 2,900 rand to the receiver of revenue. Whose money is the receiver of revenue taking? The company's money. The shareholder's money. Who pays company tax? Shareholders pay company tax. Investors. Companies in fact don't pay tax, not income tax. Other taxes, yes. But income tax not paid by the company because you're taking the shareholders' money. So it's the investor that pays the tax. Okay. So and that's why income tax of a company is not part of the cost of doing business. It is a tax on the investor, and that is why company tax has an influence on people wanting to invest in companies outside of especially foreign. That is why us, we are not going to pay the least taxes if they invest, but get the greatest return. So they have to weigh up return against tax, against risk. But that's the point. Now, because we have a limited company, and in a limited company, which is not a PTY limited, it's not a private company, in that company the shares are freely transferable. If I own the shares, I put my money into that company, I need nobody's permission to buy more of the shares, and I need nobody's permission to sell my shares. I can just go to the nearest person and say, listen, I've got some Anglo-American shares, do you want them? And if he says yes, we can do the deal, and it's done. No referring back to anybody will, like with a private company. So if you want to put money into somebody else's company, because why? You say Peter is a great expert on IT. We all know that. So if he has a company that he's running, that is an IT company, I say I have so much confidence that this guy is going to do well, then I'm prepared to put in some of the capital into this company because I'm going to wait for my dividends to come up. Or the company is going to grow so big that the value of my shares are going to increase. You know, I paid nominal value for example, 1 rand a share. But because he's making so much profit and he's putting a lot of that profit back into the company, lots of people want to buy shares in these companies, and they are offering now more. They now are offering 2 rand per share. So now is a good idea for me to sell, because now I'm actually doubling my money. You see? So by the share increasing in value, the shareholder scores. He makes a profit, because the company has become worth more. And that is why I have confidence in my friend here, that he will run a very good business that will grow and become bigger, so that lots of people want to share in their profits, and that's why they want to put money, they prefer to put money down to get that return. But now it's not always easy, if I have shares, to find somebody who wants to buy them. And then at what price are they going to, you know, we can argue about the price today. And that is where the securities exchange comes. Because it is a marketplace. It is a central marketplace. If I have shares in a public company that is listed on the stock exchange, we'll come to that now, then I take my shares to that market to sell it, because the buyers also know that is where they can buy. So it is a marketplace where buyers and sellers come together. And the big thing that that any stock exchange or securities exchange wants to do is to create trust. It has lots and lots of rules to ensure that there are, that there will always be fair, that all transactions are guaranteed. You know, if you put your shares at the JSE and you say, sell my Anglo-American shares, and if the broker comes back and he says, yes, I managed to sell them, you are guaranteed that you will get the money. There is no risk. And that's why stock exchanges are successful, because if people didn't trust the fact that if you sold, you will get your money, or if you bought, that you may have paid for the shares, but oh, now I don't get the shares, now I've got this problem and that problem. It is absolutely guaranteed. They want confidence. So confidence in the exchange is the first thing. And that is why they have rules, and they have well-trained brokers, and they have, it's stuff that has been learned over many years. So what really happens in the stock exchange? First of all, to get on the board. Now, on the board in the stock exchange really means, because in the old days there was a big board right round on the wall. And your company, if it was accepted as shares that will be traded on that exchange, they wrote your company's name on that board. And that's how you are on the board, not the board of directors, but on the trading board. And in the old days, of course, everybody, the brokers were on the floor, and that's where buyers and sellers got together. Some would have instructions to buy, and some would have instructions to sell. And they would shout out, and that's why it's mayhem. It's actually lovely to see. They walked around shouting, you know. 400 and that times that they show. Okay. So what the stock exchange really is, it's a big auction. Everybody knows how that auction works, and that is called that stock exchange is at the end of the day. It's a big place where they have a permanent auction of all the shares of the companies on their board. Today it's all electronic. You put your offer and your bids on a computer, and when you're prepared, if I'm selling and I see a price that I like, I can take it, but that's electronic. So it is an ongoing auction where we have bids and offers. I offer my shares for sale, and people bid to buy my shares. And that is how the price mechanism in the stock exchange works. We also call it price discovery, because we don't know what the price is. If I had to do a deal on the street corners, you would never be sure that what you got was a good price or a bad price or whatever. But the stock exchange is price discovery, because through different bids and offers, I offer my shares for sale at 5 rand a share. The best bid I can get is 3 rand a share. I said, no, I'm not going to do a deal at that. But somebody else comes along and he says, I'll give you 4 rand. I said, okay, 4 rand I'll take. And then, in this way, the price is fixed, because that price is important. These shares are selling at 4 rand a share. That's the last transaction. And that's why during the day, we call it intraday volatility, the price does that. But is it going up? It goes up. The price does this. Strangely enough, it never goes up in a straight line. But then you know the trend is up. So it might be a good idea to buy. Or if you've already bought at a very low, it may be a good idea to sell. Because what you want to do is, it might do that.
And there's no limit
to
how high it can go or how low it can go.
No, there's no limit to how high it can go and no limit to how low it can go. Although stock exchanges do have, they do impose limits. They are very high limits. They say a share cannot increase its price by more than 50%. Well, no, it won't go that high. It'll be something like 20%, more than 20% a day. Because they'll stop trading it. Because then there's something wrong. And the same with falling, they might, it starts really start falling to the bottom, they close the exchange for the day and wait for things to calm down. That happened on 9/11 when they closed the New York Stock Exchange, because they knew, I mean, people panicked. You know, we think this all has to do with money. It has a lot to do with emotion. Markets are driven by fear and greed. That's what drives markets. People sell because they fear they might lose if they don't sell now. And people hold on to shares because they are greedy. They just know it's going to go up, so we're going to get more. Don't sell yet. Both may be a mistake under the circumstances. So, since there is such a lot of emotion in buying and selling, you can understand why, if there's suddenly a fear that the world economy is going to go mashuga, then all shares all over the world will start falling. Why? Because people fear. Ooh, I better get out now. Take my money and run. And now let's say that there is a fear about emerging markets. Now, emerging markets are higher risk markets. That's why you are supposed to get better profits, better returns when you invest in it. Because why would you invest in a higher risk market if you're not getting a better return? And really, then you go for a much lower return but a much safer investment. But because they and greed, it's driven by greed, so they invest at a higher risk, but then they expect a higher return. Suddenly, people say, shoof, you know, these markets, I'm not sure. I think there's a bubble. You know, the returns have been too high for too long, like in China. It's grown over 10%. The economy is overheated. Now I'm starting to get worried, you know. How long can the good times continue? And people say, that's not getting out now. Strangely enough, a lot of people just make that same sort of decision at the same time. And the fear sort of spreads, and everybody starts selling. Now, if everybody starts selling, buyers can pick up bargains, because just now I said, I want to sell for R5. The guy offers me R3. I say, no. But if I'm careful, I'll take 3 seconds before we can get it. The next guy comes and he offers one. Let me just get out. You know, I paid four. So, I might have bought for three. So I'm going to lose two, but that's better than losing everything. And that's the way people, and that's the way how that emotion spreads across, because investors are not only local, investors are from all over the world. They invest in different countries. And therefore, it is spread easily. If all the investors were South Africans, in other words, if the stock exchange only had South African money, you would not find that it responds to what's happening in China and what's happening all over, because it would only respond to what's happening in South Africa. What people were thinking about this economy. But because so many of the investors are foreign investors, you know, they take a general view on this type of economy. And the other point that I just think I need to make is, you could already see it from what I've said, is that people speculate by buying and selling shares on the stock exchange. The companies themselves don't get that money. The money is made by the guy who sells the shares or who buys the shares. He makes the profit. Where does the company get the money from? It only gets the money from the initial public offering, the IPO. That's when we decide, look, our company, my friend here with his IT company has now been so successful that he wants to list it on the stock exchange, because then he can get a lot more capital to build his company. But he'll have to show the stock exchange, first of all, that he has a sound record. A sound financial record, financial management, and that it's a good business. In other words, he has to have a bank record. Otherwise, they won't take him onto the board. But now let's say, and he's got to have a certain size. If it's too small a company, they're not going to be interested. So, Peter goes and he's successful. He gets onto the board. What he now does is, he offers for sale shares in his company. He's created a lot of shares in the company that nobody owns yet. And the investment bank also supports the issue. This IPO, initial public offering. He now initially offers these shares. They may have a value of, a nominal value of 1 rand per share. But he says, but look, these shares are not being offered to the public at 1 rand per share. They are being offered at a premium. Because we think, in fact, it's worth quite a lot more than that. So we're offering them at 2.50 per share. And because the bank will probably make a valuation and say, look, I think we can get 2.50 per share. And so we put them on and we invite investors, usually directly, but through the brokers and through the banks that know who the investors are. And they write to them and say, hey, you can get this initial public offering. People usually like initial public offerings. It's usually fully subscribed. In other words, all the shares are taken up. Because they know, in a company like that, you know, if the people who are offering it are credible people and a credible bank behind it, they know that the first day that these shares actually hit the board, in other words, the public offering, is going to sell for more than you pay for as an IPO. So people will say, well, I'm going to get these shares at 2.50, but I think this share will probably go up to 4.00. Within the first week, go up to 4.00 a share. Which means I can make 1.50, which is an excellent percentage return for a 5-day investment. But now what happens to the company? It gets 1 rand for each share, which is ordinary share capital. But it actually gets 2.50, so it gets another 1.50. It's a premium on the share capital, but it becomes part of the company's capital. That is the last time the company actually makes money from what happens on the stock exchange. Now, what is capital? It's now performing, it's using that capital, it's growing, it's making profit, declaring dividends, and all that sort of stuff. And because it's successful, people are clamoring for its shares, and therefore the share price goes up because people are prepared to pay more for it, because it's making such good profits that people expect a certain return on their money. So 20% on my money today, if he's doubling his profits, then people are prepared to pay higher because 20%. They'll still get their 20% return even if they pay more. And sometimes they think it's going to grow so much over a short period of time or in the medium term that they are prepared to pay even more than the acceptable price. And it's like a lower return in the beginning because and that's what happened with the IT companies in America. They were really selling paper. They were selling hope. They had no real substance, but people were just thinking, hey, we must get in now because this stuff is going to go sky high. I think that takes me about as far as I can go on this issue.
What are the positions you think about? We believe to explore this is an easy thing for another day. Because there's quite a lot here. That's one thing we can think about. The other thing to point out is that we started at 5 to 10, 25 minutes later, so we can finish 25 minutes later, so it's not the end of the world. It seems to be a little tricky. One is that I think women need to know that the Timothy format is the same, but all the time to deal with. We need from 10 a.m. to 12:30, 2.5 hours off on a Wednesday. Oh, is that correct? Eh? And then we meet in the afternoon as well. No, the house is in the afternoon. The whole system is now changed. Monday is the constituency day, nobody comes to Parliament on Monday. Tuesdays, I think it was stopped from 10 to 12, away from 2 to 4,
yes.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But for us, since we are Wednesday, from next Wednesday, we're meeting from 10 to 12:30. Where we have legislation, we'll apply to meet on Tuesday. Also, explain to Monday, I don't know, program is erratic. I discussed it with the minister and partner because the entire program has been closed in disarray. The first time it's happened in years. It's like the first time ever to start being the same. Because the department, understand, they're not blaming anybody. Let me stress that because somebody is not supporting the wrongly. They're not blaming anybody, but cabinet has not approved certain things in the building and so on. So both the infra-proposal and the corruption express for which we're going to deal with today, for example. It's not on the agenda. So what we have negotiated with the department is that until a bill is introduced, it's difficult for us to have our program. So our program is a bit erratic for that reason. But let's get back to the issue. Question. Kavita had a hand up, I know. Peter? Anybody else? Okay. Now this is one sentence. He'll be getting hot soon, so why don't you just stand there?
No, say, I was just interested in finding out why might anybody want to buy shares when somebody else wants to get a shares. What is the logic?
The logic behind that would probably be on the stock exchange is here in Greece. I think I'm the buyer. I want to buy these shares because I think that company has a lot of potential still, and I think in a year's time it may well still double its price. That's my view that I take of the company. You say, well, you know, I've already made quite a bit of profit here, and if I carry on, perhaps the company doesn't do as well, perhaps the price goes down. So it's because we take different views of the future of the company. That's everyone.
Okay, any other questions?
Yeah.
Do you think
it's
similar
just a question that I just said, by using your example, you had 40% and she had 60%. Now you double the number of shares, 2,000 shares, 20,000, which means your percentage that you own is now less. How is that compensated for? Remember, I used to own 40% of this company. Now by issuing more shares, I don't have 40% of the shares anymore.
Unless you buy more of the new shares that are issued, unless you buy 40% of the new shares, you will still have, then you'll still have 40%. But you issue the new shares, you would have to agree that we need the money. Yeah, you would have to agree to it.
Expecting to get more profit in the future. You know, and also you must know that.
Okay,
Numa de Cuna, or you never follow money stream in stock market. You know, the real investor, as a matter of fact, the stock market creating the original good way is to let the market to collect more money, right, in an easy way. But now, you know, the stock market, because it's really like a gambling, you know, gambling market. And you know that the real investors, they are looking for this market, they don't look at this term, they look at the true value of the company. They don't care.
True value.
Yeah, true value of the company. And you don't care what is the stock market now. Maybe it keeps on falling, but you see, the real investors, they will keep on buying. If that means your obtain of this, the asset is cheaper in the market. So it's quite dangerous. We are just understanding, but don't get me to say that thing.
So may I just make a comment? Something which I initially have to read the people to understand. As Martin said, you find that everybody decides to start standing at the same time. They call it the herd instinct. It's because if I see you with us standing, genius standing, then I'm also standing because something is wrong. But I think we all lump together as emerging markets. So South Africa is doing everything right, but because of some other emerging markets, that is some problem. The guy sitting in America doesn't say, well, let me sell these 10 countries and keep South Africa. He says, sell the emerging markets too. And then we also get that when there's Trump in Argentina.
I can make one other comment whilst you say we're going to concentrate on this thing. And that is that Eugenie said, you don't borrow money to buy shares, and it's quite true because what you borrow for the future. But now what happens with BEE? What happens with BEE? Remember I said your liability is limited. The shareholder's liability is limited. Limited to what? Limited to the amount of money that he's paid for his shares. What if he hasn't paid for his shares? What if they said, as they do, don't worry, I'm giving you R1 million worth of shares and we'll pay it out of dividends. When that company goes down the drain, they're going to come to you and say, well, you haven't paid your shares. So, give us $1 million. So then your limited liability really means nothing.
So all BE have that risk.
Well, a lot of them, but I'm not sure where they all do that.
Can I say something?
Yes.
But you see, you think, now that you are right, you know, a lot of people doesn't understand, they have to borrow money to buy shares. Unless the stock market, the leasing company is very reputable. And also when they are trying to sell you the 5% of the total share, they give you a good discount.
Yeah.
You know, if they give you a good discount, you know, which is sure, maybe you buy for the true asset, you know, maybe 10% or 5% more, or even if they're equal, right? And then they will show you the end of the day, the dividend can cover, or even you know, dividend cover, you are still sure because the share you get, it is in the true as the value, so it's not going to hurt you. And the other thing, if you look at the company, every year, they give you dividend by share. This is not the company. Because you connect your share to everybody as a dividend, that is your person comes. Your shares become smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
You know,
smaller and smaller.
They will give you a tax.
Yeah.
It was just a healthy company, but they make profit, they will give you a tax at the end of the day. Instead of share.
Yeah, I should have suggested to you that Len from Zaza is here. Welcome. I didn't see him, but I was just looking at everybody's here. He claims to be some of the good 15 minutes late. And then I went on a little secret mention of this and shook up another 10 minutes. Before Martin here, we started at 5 to 11, so we can go on for another 10 minutes or so, and then we'll come to you. But also, I've got a few questions. Firstly, you know, my own sense is maybe it's my fluid state, okay? It's more funny, but you know, I'm not saying I'm vegetable, but especially I'm fluid. So, you know, there's a lot of things I don't understand, and I think we need a more even exchange around this, right? I'll just raise some of these questions, and you just pick up on two or three. But the reason I'm saying it is because I want to lose it or whatever, and I want to come back to these things. You see, I think I know, but I'm on no time, it's unfair on you, but I think these are issues that we're taking notes and will signal that we come back to. We take off next time from where we left off now. But the sort of questions I'm interested in is, you see, how does the average person have some technical thing
what causes fluctuations. So the fluctuations are going to be our emotions. They're not necessarily irrational. And that's what Professor Nagarod wants to say, that they're immobile strong men, because they're not susceptible to rational explanations. Are you business day now? Relatively, so in that sense I have. But I still think there needs more in-depth understanding. There must be some measure of objective criteria that we use. The IT company that uses the following. So around that. For example, if I take an IT firm, I'm not talking about a company or a business like that. I am an individual. I'm a local individual entity. If I buy a telecom, what's the criteria? I'm sure there must be some rational criteria to decide when to buy and when to sell it. So, the second area is
Marnie would actually be able to answer
very easily. What determines the fluctuation of the price? So the second thing I want to ask you was a more fundamental question. What more specifically dictates whether a private company is public or not? I'm absolutely clear what the relevant part is. I know you're saying the one you can some fishes easily, the other you can't be. It's very restricted. Unless you get the consent of the fellowship on the private company, you can't. But I'm still, I think there are other reasons that, because we usually have time, we have to explore, but around that area. Then thirdly, you know about avoiding tax if you are wanting to buy shares in the company. Now, if I'm correct, you said, is there a way that you can say, okay, we won't take dividends, that you plow back the profits into the company as a way of avoiding paying tax? But you think even before you decide what you're going to do, whether you're going to plow the money back or take it, just pay the tax first. I'm not sure. So maybe there's no way of avoiding the tax, right? Then I'm not sure what the role of investment bank is and where they come into play, especially in IPO. I'm also not sure why you would go for an IPO rather than other forms. Then, you know, like, for example,
Why would I go for an IPO? Share capital. Okay. Capital that I gain into the company through the selling of shares. I never have to repay. And I pay no interest on it. So it puts no pressure on my cash flow. It doesn't increase my debt load. In fact, it increases, it strengthens my balance sheet. Money that I borrow, I have to repay all of that. And B, it puts pressure on my cash flow because I've got to pay, I've got to pay the capital, but I've also got to pay interest. So it increases the actual physical cash flow cost of my company, which means I will have less money. I will have more money in the short term, but as time goes on, I'm in fact spending more on a loan than I receive. But of course, I have the use of the money, which is the advantage. So you will usually find that a company, a good company, has a certain amount of gearing. We call it gearing if you borrow money.
Yeah.
So it will have a reasonable balance between share capital and loan capital. In fact, if you get an IPO of a company and you see it only has share capital and no loan capital, you can go for it because it's not properly geared. And we call it gearing because it's like a car. If you borrow no money, you have low gearing or no gearing. It's like a car that is stuck in first gear. It's very strong, but it'll never pick up speed. So by borrowing money, it's like going to second and to third and to fourth. But there's a healthy balance and there's an unhealthy balance. If you borrow too much, you know, then it's in danger. But that's why you would go for capital, to keep up that balance. Instead of borrowing money, you need some money that does not put financial stress on the company.
Look, can I do something? You think we need like a full 4-hour slot or something? Now, when you come back after the first consultation period, they are committee days. That's an easier slot. So we negotiate with you. So we take off from here. Eric was starting writing notes. So what he's going to do is just put some expenses. So we take off from over there. Okay. So let's leave it there now. The other people do just the other question that we'll follow up on later. Okay, the other question is asking, we want to thank very much, Martin.
You really want to
negotiate with the very soon, because it's the next question.
Yeah, well, whenever.
Yeah. When they have a proper in-depth.
Yeah.
And the answer is, you're more than well, I don't know what the DA would say, but that's what they're telling you, but you're more than welcome to come to the office and spoke. But we're going to put some of the issues on the agenda there.
I was a joint budget committee.
Yeah,
so I had to
look at what they
fine.
Yeah, yeah, fine. Okay, we'll just bring something up. We had Esco here, okay? And when Esco was here, we gave him 7 days to reply in writing to the questions. Now, I would like everybody to try to, since we don't have a family in Texas, we would cover it and we have not got the reply, so can we follow that up? Eric has done some minutes here, and that's correct, the sentence from there. So Eric has mentioned to put together a report. So as I remember it, between Professor Eberhard, Sulari Damashev, and Eric Voskarski, they are meant to do a report, which will be the departure point for our next consideration. We'll also give the report to the Minerals and Energy Committee, so that we are more or less citizens in how we're moving forward, okay? So can we cover you as a secretary of the committee for now? You can engage with Eric and follow that up, but we haven't now, 3 weeks later, there's been no movement on that side.
Chairperson, do you have a date when we expect SAA to come to?
Remember that we did a quarterly report on the 28th. Now, on that day, the department will report on progress as far as the SAA's are concerned, and SAA. Now, if they have 10, and if there are specific issues that are coming up, we then call the entity itself. But given what's going to happen next week, Wednesday, I suggest we decide next Wednesday whether we need SAA with us on the 28th.
No, I wasn't thinking in particular of the 28th, but just in terms of our last meeting decision to engage expertise.
Oh, yeah.
So that Eddie can also be aware of it, that he must also try and identify some of these experts.
Yeah, we have to start looking for an expert on
SAA. Oh, yeah, just correct. You know, it's not finalized.
Yes.
Yeah. Now we need to negotiate the terms of that. You got his
sort of like statement for how to use the money and all this. Can you give me a copy of that? Because what we're going to do is, if this financial year, we would like some of the money to go out. But now the idea is we must process things with Eric. Eric has to also be able a year or two from now to do the thing. Well, Eva has been there for a lifetime. So he's not going to be there for Eva, but he'll acquire certain skills in this area. So it's also a contractual thing we need to do. We need that he must teach Eric. So we'll talk about that later. Yeah.
So the other one also, I don't know if I read in the formal committee,
yeah.
It is when the SOEs come report to the committees with the board chairs and so on. I would like to suggest that one thing that we ask them is, taking a note from the PIC, is that we ask them to bring us a brief summary of their remuneration subcommittees and explain to us how it is that they arrive at the salary of their executive staff.
You know that first. Okay, good. Guys, 21. Yes, okay.
Just a small thing for you. You mentioned about the program of the previous meeting. Just the one shepherd.
Yeah, I don't know what happened last time.
You mentioned all this water school and things coming, but you need a program.
I spoke to Kawe 4 times and said to her, please bring the program. I told her it wasn't there. Kawe said it's not Bakazi's issue. Then we asked Ron Bakazi to go and collect it. In the meanwhile, we couldn't wait for her. So I thought the program we distributed would be notices that went out because in principle it's through the program. So I am pleading with Kawe because this idea with the secretary, not the assistant. Where's the program? Okay. So what's happening? Why are not members of the who's supposed to do it? And I remember the person today. Or they're not getting their name. See, I don't know what's going on here. Oh, it's so good otherwise. Can't we please? See, I have to follow your rights to you. Can you write a letter to Longo Kami? She's not serious. I just signed on my behalf. She's not serious. I don't know what else to do. Put it in the disposal if you want. And ask you to please just repeat the stuff and send a copy to the Papua and Janela. We've been trying for 2 weeks to get this thing approved.
The first week was partly my fault. What had happened was I did ask the secretary to include more reports. And initially doubted, and in fact I am the one that there was one more report to include. The second week, I don't want to know what I can do. Can you write the lines of children at times? I just don't have the energy, but I'm too busy, and I'm sick with it. But can we please beg whoever is coming? I have to deal with you. I'm begging you, right? Can I put this on the ground? Eric, just like to talk. The chairperson is now begging Kawe to please give the committee members, it is almost there, midway in the first place. This draft was made 5 weeks ago. The five person readers went over to the committee secretary of that capacity, the previous one. I did it. I have to look up the date. Let me tell you what happened the other month. I have to look up the date. Only the committee secretary gets some data, which is one stuff as well. But in any case, really, on the such a thing to do here. So, it's your job. Okay. Do your job. Okay. Write a letter to Kawe. Ask him to please. Right, I'm taking it. Please distribute. Yeah. In the mail that goes out this afternoon. Latest the mail goes out on a Thursday morning. Then it was a mail, they will attach a notice from the COPA committee about the FAA briefing next week and the venues and so on. The members will have this program in their mail, which will leave at the latest on a Thursday morning, so it gets to them by the Thursday afternoon. Okay, now is that possible? Can we do it? Or do you want me to do it? Okay, sure, do it. But let me tell you, things have improved tremendously. Just to record. I have phoned her about 28 times. 26 times she's answered the phone. Twice she replied within a minute. It's shocking to have a little phone. Two is only having money. And we phoned her only 4 times directly. I phoned her on a landline. Each time she answered. I don't know if Khadija phoned her, but Khadija is 100% record. So, sorry. Can we note that too, everything else in the report? That availability and accessibility. It's a blind spot. Okay, I'm also told that you are not invited to lunch. But how is it in this committee? I'm reading up, not inviting the person to lunch. Okay, over to the next. And now here, let me explain. Oh, I'm still allowed to Tuesday because today we're going to make people come and so on. I told the guy, not to spread the GK yet, not to spend more than 3 hours. He's going to take us through both cities as we now are. He's going to go for about 20 minutes to half an hour. Just a few after both cities. Did you get this from the EAE? The R is the right one actually. It's both cities. Because this is from the estimate of national expenditure, that's correct. See, which one are we supposed to look at?
What is the amount you have? Amount of the appropriation is 693 million.
Yeah, both
All right, then I can't account for this thing.
Those allocations, however, those figures are also classified according to
current payments, transfer of subsidies, and payments of capital assets. Now, what's interesting about that is that when one then, and each of the programs is then also divided again. So within the program legal governance and risk function, you will see that that global amount is also then divided up into the functions of current payments, which is primary compensation for employees and interesting and goods and services, transfer and subsidies, as well as payments for capital assets. So what's worthwhile about that, as we'll see a bit later, is a particularly interesting allocation to a particular program. The first question, or the simplest thing, is to go and have a look at the economic classification and see what is actually, what is that being allocated to. And we'll see that in the case of manufacturing enterprises quite clearly. Please interrupt me or stop me if there's any questions or... my concern is also not to be not condescending, but not to bore the committee. So I'm not always sure how familiar the committee is with the vote.
I think my remarks up to now have a question on
I'm saying three refers to the kind of four basic perspectives. And then pages 4 and 5 summarize, well, page 4 I think summarize what I've been saying now about the manner in which the figures are organized. So I'm now on page 5. If I was as a non-specialist, as a, you know, not knowledgeable particularly about this department, if I was just looking at the allocations and I saw huge spikes in allocations, such as, you know, there certainly are in this book over the last few years, my first inclination would be to go to the economic classification, see what that is for. And with this department, it clearly is, most of the spikes in allocations of the department are transfers. They're transfers to some of the SOEs for specific functions or services, specifically over the last few years, related to the capitalization of taking page 6, and the simplest calculation, which actually does really reveal a lot, it's related to the relative priority calculation, and it really is as simple as taking an allocation, dividing it by a total, and multiplying it by 100. It's a simple percentage calculation. What is useful about it is that it's sort of three things. It can tell us about the relative priority of a program within the total allocation of the system. It can tell us, secondly, about the priority accorded to the department within the total resource envelope which is voted on. So in other words, the share of total public spending, or rather national revenue fund spending. And it can also, perhaps, at this point, also tell us a little bit about the allocation of the bottom of the share of GDP. I mean, all of those are pretty simple calculations that I'll just share with you. On page 7, you'll see the budget figures. It's taken from those days. And the first thing to say here is that it's very good, perhaps not for you, but for me, it's very difficult to make any sense of this, to come to any interpretation of these figures. And I mean, that's probably the fundamental point that I'll be making in this presentation, that a simple analysis, really quite simple mathematically, can actually be quite revealing in terms of engaging with this information. When you see object 7 taken from the vote, it's very difficult to come to any conclusion. What you see there are the allocations to the 6 programs, and right at the bottom the total allocation, and you see them for the period from 0304 to 0910. Now, of course, the last 3 are estimates, they're spending intention. 3 year ones are audited outcomes, or in some cases, revised estimates. On the next page, I presented some of the
The method is, we ask questions at the end, but if there's an issue of like conceptual clarity, I mean, you know what he's saying, you won't be able to answer. That's fine.
I think on page 7, you compare it with any alternative department, you will get more clarity and what are the issues with the department.
Thank you.
Fine.
Yes,
this
is to unpack that remark briefly. So, as they argue, they give us no indication of what this money is. What I've done on the next page is taken some of that information again. And just, you'll see going down the road, the GDP in total is the same one from the GDP. GDP has been taken from the budget review, and the total expenditure is the personal expenditure of the National Revenue Fund. And the last 2 rows are just simple calculations. All I've done is taken the allocation, for example, to administration, and divided it by the GDE budget, as well as by, and then I've also divided the GDE budget by total expenditure. If you look at the very last row, you'll see then what that essentially tells us is the trend in the, kind of say, the priority accorded to the functions of the DPE as a share of total expenditure. In 0304,
the DD budget was 0.06% of the total budget. 0.184. And then in 05-06, 06-07, both of those years, you see quite a sharp increase as a share of total expenditure. Before it kind of leveled off a bit in 09-10. So I'd like to stop there for a second and give you a chance to look at that. So it's a very simple calculation. On the next page, I've done a similar sort of something. I've just taken the table on page 7. And what I've done here is just calculated the share to each of the programs as a percentage of the total allocation to the department. Give you a moment to look at that, and then I'll make some comments.
So 89% is going to go to manufacturing enterprise, is that correct?
That is correct. That was in 04-05.
So it's also 2008.
That's correct. We're at 910 and yes. The main thing I want to point out is just that it is quite a lot easier to engage with where the department is going.
One of
the simple sort of
percentage calculation. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you see, like, common experience, you see joint project facility jumped up quite substantially to 16.2 in the year 2008-2009, from 1.4 or 0.42 years ago. And the energy broadband infrastructure is 25.2 in this. No. It was 25.3 in the last financial year. But this money I gathered in, but it's not behind the doorway, that's right.
Well, the 0607, this is information just from the E&E.
E&E,
yeah. Yeah. Right. The 0607 is for the one that's coming to an end now.
Yeah.
It is a revised estimate.
Yeah, right.
So one would expect radical leverage from that. Because midway through the OCS, then again, there was a certain opportunity for in general.
Okay.
From my perspective, which is very much that of an outsider, there's some interesting questions.
What are the questions?
Well, I would, for example, just by looking at this and having someone knowledgeable from the department in front of me, want to know, for example, if you look at energy in the broadband infrastructure question, you have a huge allocation, 25% of it going in 06-07.
Yeah.
And then it falls quite radically.
Yeah,
so that's an interesting question. There's a mental fact that really makes these figures a bit of a roller coaster. It's a huge, huge allocation going to manufacturing enterprise. You'll see that in 2003, 2004, the department was kind of a small department puttering along, really. You know, administration made up 44% of its budget.
Yeah.
The allocation from 04-05 through to 07-08, you can see 89% of it, 96, 71, 72, and then 89 again, taking the form of transfer to some of the SOEs. It's not a result of that the relative priority obviously of the administration function and so on has declined. Now the interesting thing is that from 08-09, of course, this is projected to 4. In other words, the assumption is that there'll be no more significant transfers to some of the SOEs through this program after the 07-08 allocation. Which is, of course, an interesting one, and I think you're quite aware of the dynamics behind these figures. But of course, the question is that the case? And then, as the chairperson pointed out, I would also be very interested to know, perhaps, what the
you increase function or increase priority for going to primary facility if it is to take a quite a significant larger share. So part of that might be a result of the manufacturing enterprise share dropping quite rapidly, which makes the joint project facility a larger share.
Yeah, but we come back to manufacturing, because this is consistent with what the department of government did.
I mean, I think there was a single line in 2004 on the role of state-owned enterprise. That instead of privatization and immediate partnerships with the private sector, the state would use the SOE to develop infrastructure, to reduce the cost of the public sector. And I think the aim is, with the people in Geneva, that, you know, down the road, the once we start to take our enterprise, they will begin to rely differently on their own balance sheet, and the state will not come to their rescue. Now, one of the challenges that are immediately facing the SOE, of course, is SAA. They want 4 billion for recapitalization. How much of that is going to come from the national system, and how much is going to come from this kind of from the capital market? So these figures make a lot of sense. Because they, as Mari said, they commensurate or they match the program of government and the strategic, what do you call it? Strategic change of direction or strategic change. Okay. Thanks, Richard Gosh.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll just apologize on the next slide. I'm going to take 10. The same figures, just visually. The manufacturing enterprises one is terribly faint and it's really high. But it's a little embarrassing because it's just saying that time is not visible. So if we can perhaps move to page 11. I think I chose the wrong color there. What, as I said to you at the beginning, once you see the kind of the program allocation, the next step is to perhaps look at the economic classification. And this confirms for the remarks of the shareholders. And this is now the total allocation, but divided into one of three core funds, namely current payments, transfers and subsidies, and payments for capital assets. And I put the figures on the first quarter, and then I've also done a percentage calculation there. And what you can clearly see, if you go to the bottom three rows, how most of that increase to manufacturing enterprises, I think it's reasonable to assume, takes the form of transfers. Looking at the as you know, a very large transfer from 405 to 0708. So those are the actual amounts which are going to the which are obvious from the TGSA. I mean, it's beyond the scope of this presentation, but the question of course is, I mean, most economists would call that a trend. In terms of transfers, and I mean perhaps the bit of a cliche phrase of throwing good money after bad is applicable, but I think that's beyond this presentation. But certainly that would be, and I'm not sure the committee is engaging with that question. A last kind of slide on the share of the total investment. Because the manufacturing enterprises allocation is so large at times, it's not distorts everything else. The work on page 12 would just give you trends for the other programs. I've removed the manufacturing enterprises one. And this just gives you a sense of the relative priority of the other five programs.
Excluding
it, because it kind of distorts everything else. It's so huge. Because I mean, essentially the department's budget is small. But of course, it's got quite new terms for transfers to the SOE. And now, so if you give me a moment to look at that, and then please make some comments. Again, this is the point of departure. These are very basic figures. But, you know, inevitably questions which would arise.
You see here, legal governance and risk jumped up quite a lot from last year to this year, from 2.1 to 19.4. And then transport enterprises from 0.6 to 8.6. Joint project facilities, 10 times as we say. And then a huge drop for energy, which is reflected with the early observation. And administration sheets are there. there's quite a big discrepancy between the figures for 06, 07, and 07, 08.
Well, what has happened there is a little bit deceptive. That primarily reflects the, again, a very large transfer to energy broadband infrastructure and mining. So that 4.06, 07 is a bit of a,
yeah,
a unique year. It gives a huge transfer, which makes everything else fall in the priority. So it's a little bit deceptive. It doesn't mean that less money is being allocated. If one wants clarity on that, one needs to go back to the page where the actual economic classification, for example, is, or just the allocation. Thank you. If you look on page 7,
see the actual money going to administration, 57, 40, 46, 51, 59, so the gradual,
And you'll see the 722 million in 06, 07 to energy broadband infrastructure. So that's that sort of spike, which if one goes in the vote, if you would go to that program, you'd also have specific unpacking of that, what that's for. Which, I mean, I'm sure, is there anybody who would, what would that be for? Is it a left quarter or
infra?
The large allocation to the energy broadband, is it right?
Infraco was allocated as 700 million.
Yeah.
And then Exco was also
allocated. About 627 million for us. If you have the ICT sector, it's quite a lot more than that. So that would be that, which then would be a transfer to that. Just to take us back to the slide of 7 where I had the absolute amount, I said that a very simple thing to just get some questions out of the figures that they presented here. I mean, it's very easy done in Excel, especially if you're able to use spreadsheets. It's very quick to generate. Yeah, can I stop for a moment? Is there any questions about that?
Hello,
Zane.
I just noticed the
I've been diligently praying for the game.
Don't look at me like that. This is a closed meeting with you. Oh, the CMG. The CMG still, yeah. Okay. We'll go that comment. Go to the other folder. Not really. Okay, go ahead.
Alright, so the second sort of technique, if you like, is just related to progress or success. Which is essentially a matter of adjusting allocation for inflation. The budget allocations that they presented in the EAE and in the review and all other documents really are nominal allocations. They are allocations that do not try to reflect the impact of inflation. They're simply the monetary value of allocations in the year in which the allocation was made. It was a very simple example just to, you know, kind of refresh our memory about this kind of thing. If you're looking at allocations of, in 1999, of 2 million, 2000, 2.5 million, and 2001, 2.6 million, the temptation is, of course, to say that the 2001 represents a 25% increase over the 1991. And, you know, well, just to subtract the figure, to divide by 200,000, and multiply by 100. Get an increase of 25%. And I mean, that's true nominally, but really, if you're looking at trends in budget allocation, what you're really interested in is the amount of goods and services that can be purchased with the allocation. So you're interested in the purchasing power of the allocation. And to determine that, you need to, as it were, remove the effects of inflation. And that's pretty simple. On the next slide, 3040, that's the nominal percentage change calculation, which simply takes, because there are the minus given trends over here, the nominal percentage change calculation simply takes, let's say, the 2004-5-1, subtract from that the 2003-4-1 and divide it. So for example, in our very simple example, you take 2.5 million minus 2 million, divide by 2 million times 100, and you get come to the conclusion that the allocation has increased by 25%. It's nominal, which means kind of that face value, if you like. It doesn't really tell us how much more or less the bond was able to buy for that value. And I've just also presented that I've done both very computational basis. So nominally there's a generation really inflation, because since we're not taking inflation into account, there's a 25% increase and then a 4% nominally. And then the next slide that you can just like the preferable thing to do really is and perhaps I should stop and ask why. Anybody, is there a delinquent on that?
If something is a hit, and the inflation for that year is about 30%, for the next year, you get 200. You can't say, well, I get 100 grand more. You can take off the 30% reserve, and you get only the balance that's increasing your budget.
Thank you. Yeah. In South Africa, let's take it as a rule of thumb that given that we have inflation policy, monetary policy, let's say 4.5% is a rule of thumb, that we're going to have inflation of 4.5% over the next year. That means for allocations in the budget to remain the same in real terms, they need to increase by 4.5% each year. That means if allocations increase by 4%, in real terms you are actually going to be able to buy less with that allocation. It also means that allocations increase by 7 or 8 or 9%, that there is a real increase in what the department is able to purchase. Or else being equal, there's a real increase. Now the sort of the very basic way to calculate, which is not correct, but which is a rough indication, is simply take the allocation, change the nominal terms in the allocation, and subtract your inflation. It's not entirely accurate, but if you want a rough indication, it will give you that. For example, if the department allocation is increasing by 8% a year, and the inflation estimate is 4.5%, you can roughly say that the real increase is 3.5%, which is helpful. But there's a better way to do it. The better way to do it is just to take a price index. On page 17, after that, put it out on the table. Just using our very, we'll look at the GDP 1 and 6. The Jefferson piece also points out it's fine, it's taking too long, or we're going over on
what I suggest is another 5 maximum changes in the equation. And the C is rolling in the GLA. I think we need a 15 minute break. What we can do is we'll choose the 1. Start then get out here and come back. If you continue and the GDP is here, we'll finish. Yeah. It's your only
interest in the inflation. That's an intention. On page 17, what I've done is just put the nominal allocation, the nominal trade, the inflation rate from 1990 to 2000, and from 2007 to 2001. This is purely an example I've made up that's got nothing to do with South African economy or anything. And then I have calculated the real value. And I'm going to set an insight on to do that, and I've calculated the real percentage change. I mean, the interesting thing already before we even get to the calculation is that the allocation, the real change from 1999 to 2000 was a 5% increase. But the real change from 2000 to 2001 was a decrease of 6.3% in real terms. So even though nominally there was a 100,000 more allocated department, after adjustment for inflation, the department has received less than. The process is simple. One needs to obtain the deflators or the price inversions. We are in the budget review. It's not the budget review provides we need to select the base year, convert the allocation, and calculate the percentage change. I've included the formula here. What really needs to be done is you take the nominal allocation in be multiplied by the density. I don't know, given the time constraint, if I should go too much into detail here. It is here.
Yeah.
I'm going to then just conclude perhaps by taking you page 24. And on those three pages, four pages here, I've just done. I then find a few interesting some are called comments, some are questions. Firstly, I mean, the fact that the allocation to the SOE is, I mean, specifically rather transcript, is so large. I would recommend that the committee, at times that analysis, when things go down, because it's questionable whether that's a long-term trend. And what is interested in the long-term ability of the department to engage in oversight? What has to acknowledge that it's quite a small department. Because it's, you know, six quite small programs, essentially, which at the moment, given a particular situation, time has been distorted. So that's a comment. I find it quite interesting, and this is also, I don't have an insider's point of view, this seems like it's quite interesting that one could, in discussions with the department, perhaps, so I'm going to read on page 25, see the number allocation, so another address of compensation, for the consultant contractors and special services. Going from 21 million to 34 million from the previous budget to this one coming up. It's a nominal percentage increase of 62.5%. So a real increase of about 58%. Compensation of employees in the department goes up. Also a lot, but it's maybe more than 19.2%. Now the interesting question, and that is in all the departments, you'll see quite a large, actually a very significant increase to that category of spending. In all six of the departments, if you look at the allocations to the consultant, contractor, special service. So those allocations are increasing at a much faster rate than the allocation to the department as a whole. And then there's two questions there. Simply, it's not possible to retain the team in the department, first of all. Are none of those people in social costs, rather than any other question of why not get some of the capacity in the department. It's paying huge amounts of money and increasing amounts of money now on consultants, contractors, and the like. And the second one is how does the department ensure that it's getting value for money in the consultants? It's making new sums of money available. So clearly there's a responsibility to ensure that what comes out of that. So that's it. On page 26, the department is budgeting increasingly less for its own capital functions, if you like. In 0607, it was 1.8 million.
Yeah.
It's about 920 in 0708. And it's up to 75,000 in 2910. That's a confirmed amount. Yeah. I just want to confirm it because now when I read it again, I was shocked. That's for the department's own capital. And I mean, the question would be that adequate, or is it really just that one is going to have to reevaluate it first at the time? Because I mean, the MTF has a lot of advantages for the implementation of that. But a potential disadvantage is that there may not be particularly much realism in the outer year. So sometimes I think part of the committee function is to ensure that there's realism in the budgeting process in all three of the years of the year. And then the last thing that I would say,
We obviously do get important stuff to be doing in the year, but I think also when we look at the schedule, first of all, for a second, we need to raise our offices,
just to clarify the basis on which travel and subscription allocations are made. Because to an outsider that doesn't seem particularly consistent, on page 27, I have just included 0607, 0708 allocations.
is the random one. And then in the right-hand column is there's a nominal shape. So I haven't done the presentation, I didn't bother to. Some of the programs are getting quite huge increases. 1,000% increase for government assistance within transport enterprises. 50% decrease in the legal governance and risk program. As you can see, it seems quite radical. Either the energy broadband and mining one, 450% increase to that function within its budget as well. So again, it's just interesting to clarify that. I think I'm gonna end there. There were some other things we'll talk about. But thank you.
All right, very helpful, Mr. Sam. Thank you very much. More focus, I think, because you explained to them more precisely what we want. But this is more or less what we want. Thank you very much.
Okay.
All those people will ask questions, make comments. And we agree that we're not waiting to see. People want to have teams here and see now. Can we go there one by one or two by two? Back then, when it's not the music. Let's go ahead. And the person sitting next to Len will let Len see it. Okay, well, everyone. Okay, over to Commissioner Smiley, so she can start. Anybody else? Chris, my name is the word. Wang, so it's Chris Wang. Now, this is not people saying correctly. It's Chris Wang. Pronounced like W-U-N. The correct name is Wang. Is Wang reason be better than Wang? Okay, so it's Wang. Okay, for us to get a specialist on the budget, we have to find 3 people, we have to get tenders, we submit it to a committee, and then they will look at it. God knows how they will decide, because apart from looking at the figures, what expertise do they have? What expertise do they, not you, what expertise do I have, right, in deciding who to take? The only expertise I can use is the simple one, who is cheaper. So, I don't know, the committee section is correct to ask for 3 tenders. Personally, we don't have capacity to find 3 tenders. So the simplest way out, because it's not so time enough, they do the 3 of time. Now, I was asking, what I'm putting on the agenda, what I was thinking was, step one, I would like this report if Len was mother-body for a day or so. First, we need more than 3 hours of work, Len. So you exceeded what we asked you to do.
My apologies.
I wish part of it to the doctor that approach. But in any case, first thing I want to thank you profusely for this. It was definitely more than 3 hours. I thought you were going to cover a few requirements as well. B is, I know he's not an expert in this area. C, I know he's got 1,000 hours of patients too. D is, I know he doesn't like to say, why did you warn us? I don't care. And so on. So all those things bearing in mind. I want to suggest, step one, let's give this to the Viva in 24, 48 hours. If they want to think the way it's fine, otherwise we give it. We ask the department to respond to these issues. Let them simply mark the figures. I've done them already, gave them the time. I'll bring them and say, answer these things. Like, you know, there's a sort of question you can just highlight. That's what you're going to explain this question. So that means the more productive exchange. They know beforehand what are the issues. If Len can come on the day we have the hearing and sit there and after each input when we exchange, we invite him to comment. So he doesn't have to be prepared. He can just sit there because he's a technical expert. But as he listens to the department, he then going to ask a few questions. So he could play that role. And because it will be a voluntary service at Johnson, being an NGO, and it also serves their purpose because they're engaging with the powers of being executive, it might be an interest to come. But if he can't come, that's fine. So we will manage this. If he wants to come and just observe, he's more than welcome. The other thing to think about is to also facilitate whether he should be at the public school if he's available for 4 or 5 days. So maybe you can get a better feel for the department. I'm not saying we'll become an expert in this area. Now, insofar as will we have another slot? No one knows. But if need be, we can call him late for half an hour again on the 28th. We'll do the quarterly report, we can call it a half an hour. If he's available to come, and we've got further issues of racism, but we should be very precise about what we want him to do. Or let him bring me and say, you know, can you give me half an hour, so I'm sort of 10 hours.
So the 28 is open to you for 30 minutes. What do you want to say?
No.
And then Eric will start directing to you, he's our new researcher. Great guy. He's great. Only thing he doesn't know who he is. He is our community researcher or he's our student. So to be sure, I need to go speak to his boss about certain things. But that's neither here nor there. But Eric will start, he's acquiring the skills. And he will also work with Len over the phone and get some ideas. But maybe a briefing paper, Eric, beforehand. So even if we don't do formally money, before we come in on the second, Eric will also raise about all the 2 pages of questions. Again, we can send to the department beforehand. We can send a copy to you and to Eugene as well. Yeah. Okay.
On the program,
Can I just say what the grant is referring to, because Mani is new and it's just so unfortunate that since he arrived here 7 days ago, everything has been chaotic with our program. We usually have a program that goes into the next year. We set out.
No,
it goes into the next year, it edits out what you are studying.
Yeah, we are looking at our previous program.
Who is
the title is Expanding and Deepening the Portfolio, a New Challenge. Last year's theme was, can you remember that? Yeah. The first year was Building the Foundation.
Yeah.
The second year was Defining the Portfolio. And the third year is taking increasing all the time. So it's thematically organized. Now, it's just that we came at a time when technically, as a college, and secondly, I have decided to go on strike. And I was doing the job, and I'm going to strike them. And thirdly, at the mercy of the department. They haven't delivered their program. So that's why they took all our program to them. But it's not their fault.
And in the meantime, Parliament has also changed its program.
Yeah. Yeah. Needless to say. And Kumisa Kondo is back now, as it were. And
why not the E?
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
I would not know what to judge because I'm not informed enough.
It's only the figures I gave you from OCO quarter, not all of those are locations. In fact, the first three, and then OCO 4, 04, 05, and 05, 06, are audited outcomes. So those are actual spending. And then, just click under corrections and just check that for you if you don't mind. And then the 06, 07 as well is a revised estimate. So I personally don't think that that's another significant factor. I think the fundamental factor is specific strategic intervention in some of the SOEs in the form of very large transfers. I mean, absolutely huge transfers relative to the budget of the department itself. So in a way, the department is functioning as a conduit or a channel for money to the SOE, and that's why you get these spikes. And then maybe just the last comment, with the payments for capital assets declining quite radically, again, I wouldn't sitting here be able to judge that. It's more that is an interesting question, just coming from the figures. But to make a long story short, I don't think it's a performance-related issue. I think it's a strategic issue of transfers going to the SAE.
Other questions? Can I just ask one thing? Maybe next time we engage with you, you want a longer answer, but a brief one for now. How does Treasury define what its MTV is protected? And is it reasonably consistent? I mean, what happens, quite frankly, we don't look back and say, over the last 3 years, did it achieve? Why are you laughing?
Because you're right, I've never listened.
Yeah. We barely can understand what's there on the. You know, we squint our eyes, you know, because we are teachers, because we are politicians, because we can just issue words, meaningless words too, especially as chairman of the committee, we didn't say anything. And because we can write some of us, we write the flowering report. But the truth is, you know what I think? Frankly, our budget report is pathetic. Have you seen our budget report? Yeah, I think we're pathetic. But because others are more pathetic in this parliament, we get highlighted as the committee that does report. But the truth is,
could you please
our annual report doesn't belong to our report, our annual report, I agree. Quite frankly, the whole world says, even Mani, who is not as familiar, 45-page report, which committee does research. So, I mean, we do work. But I think our budget report, quite frankly, are pathetic. And I'm taking major responsibility. Because even today, I play a major role in it. So I'm critiquing myself, which I know is not very common among the MPs. For me, that's one of the things that but throughout the world, there are three of us now. Here, I think our budget is more pathetic. And if you want to say it's pathetic, please say so.
That was that off the record.
Right on there, please.
So, Chairman, it might be better for me to comment on the MTS than on the...
The answer's like a true politician.
I'm learning, indeed. It's a question of how the MTS allocations are estimated. Did I understand that question correctly?
Yeah, how do they do it? And are they really fulfill that over the previous 3 years?
Do you mean in the broad sense of the basic... The initial determination is really a macroeconomic one. So really, that's why we've gotten such significant revenue overruns in the last few years, because the Treasury is essentially engaged in the business of planning ahead or of estimating specifically growth as a key variable which determines the overall resources available. All of this, I think, and then the allocations are a political process, fundamentally.
Yeah.
But I mean, the interesting thing to say about that is, as you all know as well, is that the process of estimating the MTF resource framework is characterized by a very, very prudent approach. In the sense that IGASA has argued, including to the Joint Budget Committee, that there's a systematic preference for caution, which may be somewhat excessive, which is why we're getting surpluses. Well, essentially what happens is, in my opinion, if the Treasury economists think that growth is going to be 5.5%, they nevertheless devise a budget which will float at a growth rate of 4.5%.
They essentially deny it.
Yes, certainly, but I'm not sure why they deny that, because it's either a matter of saying, yes, that is the case, and what's wrong with that, because would you rather be getting into trouble and have sex? Or otherwise they say that they're not able to model the South African economy within appropriately narrow margins of error. So it's one of those two options that would explain this, and I think it's more acceptable technically and perhaps politically to say, look, we are extremely cautious because the last thing we want is for our strong fiscal position to be eroded through locking us into expenditure commitments and then the revenue is less than we expect.
In other countries that run the outside world, they do project much more accurately.
Yeah. Again, I think it's not a question of technical expertise in treasury. It's a matter of the incentive that the model is saying. It's a systematic question for caution.
Like Brazil and India and so on, other developing countries, are they able to predict much more accuracy? Or do they actually do that? It's not whether they're able to, whether they do it or not.
I think they'll be able to. But of course, the so-called, many of the debt problems of many countries in the 80s and the 90s were perhaps also as a result of excessive optimism in what kind of growth would happen. So, not always.
Alright, other questions before we go to a close?
Not only the big guys, the G8 and they can afford to get it wrong.
I'm sort of being asked very general questions which I can answer to the best of my ability.
Yeah.
You know, what was interesting about the previous presenter was the emphasis on sort of a very mentality on a form of decision making which are not economically rational necessarily. And of course, the fact of the matter is that investors are notoriously skittish. John Maynard Keynes wrote very powerfully about this problem. So, a country like South Africa is liable to easily get burned by things that are out of control that are quite irrational. The fears of investors that are completely unfair. It is unfair in some sense as well. Just a final comment on that. There's a UNDP Commission study done by a group of economists at, I think it's the University of Massachusetts, called an Employment Cargo Development Program for South Africa, which in fact they argued quite convincingly though that we could run a bit of a more expansionary policy. We could, for example, let inflation go to 6-9%. And the trade-off would be to the benefit of growth-wise and employment-wise. But I think that study perhaps underestimates the perceptions investors would have of such a trend. And that's not an economic issue. That is a psychological issue, if you like.
Just a general question. Is there any country in the world that you know of that's budgeting for itself? And secondly, it is not cool to say. What everyone thinks ideologically about the Ministry of Finance, and being the nation that always agrees, is a broader life. You know. The fact is, it is utterly remarkable, isn't it? That in 1994, we had a 10.4% budget deficit, and we now, this financial year. Whatever the reason, not increasing cheap, we're not spending, blah, 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 we are 2 quarters here, and all that, we can say that. But isn't it remarkable? We are a panel of any country in the world. So it's swung around in the year 13 years, so 10.4% budget deficit, so 0.5%
surplus. I think it is remarkable. As far as budgeting for a surplus is concerned, I cannot think of any country that I speak under correction.
Mm-hmm.
To give you an example, this is a developed country example, but you know, the EU, the Maastricht Treaty governs the good fiscal governance in the EU. 3%. And Germany, amongst others, in 1 year complained that it couldn't maintain that because of social pressure, which required more spending. Now that's Germany. Clearly the social pressures in South Africa are far in excess of those set by Germany, all else being equal. So I don't think politically there's much precedent for voting for a surplus. What has made it politically palatable is the fact that we still see significant real increases in public expenditure. The government is still in real terms. And what those combined things, the fact that you have surpluses but real increases, that points to...
That's very real.
Yeah, that points to size and efficiency, but it also points to the significant under-taxation of the South African economy pre-94. In fact, a lot more revenue can be extracted from the economy than I think anybody thought. Which, of course, also helps in equal points the extent of tax evasion in that dispensation. As far as the Treasury's performance, yes, I think there's a remarkable cohesion, and I think within National Treasury as well, which has allowed just a technical performance which is quite incredible.
I need to point out to those who are new members that the current South African Revenue Commission emerged from this study group.
Yeah, yeah.
they produced election in South Commission. They also produced many ministers in the study group, and MECs and so on, and ex-MECs and so on.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you all, Lynn particularly. We will continue later on the phone to see where we take things. But any podcast you can exchange, tell them we'll see as well. We'd like you to help to empower our community leaders. So thank you all. We'll be next week with Charles.